I want to remind us there in Daniel, the 10th chapter, of how Daniel applied himself to receive a vision from the Lord. And we can read that in Daniel chapter 10, verses 2 and 3, particularly, and then 8 through 10, where Daniel fasted for 3 weeks, and then he was the only one, because he's the only one that was fasting, he was the only one that received the vision, an incredible vision. The vision is not something necessarily that we literally see. A vision is a perspective. It's an objective that the Lord can give us and reveal to us. I want to try to some of my thoughts today are hindsight, and some of them are current events. So I want to address, last Sunday we talked about a vision for our spiritual walk with the Lord, and today we're going to talk about something that has to do a lot more with just everyday life, but we need a vision for it. And a vision, many times a vision is what enables us to gain experience. And when we gain experience, it becomes credible. It's not just an experience that someone put on us, but we had a vision in our own minds, maybe about something temporal or something spiritual. And when we begin to work towards that objective and that goal, and the Lord helps us attain whatever level it is, then we have credible experience. And then that becomes something that's very valuable. You know, two of the things that will help us is keep us on track in life is having a vision and having credible experience. If you come in contact with somebody that doesn't have a vision and they really don't have experience, you have difficulty finding a place to start. If you don't have an experience, I'm not just talking about salvation. If you don't have experience in some line of work, I had a man come to my shop yesterday, and there was a little bit of a language barrier, but he didn't know what a ball joint was. So how do you explain to him the importance of a ball joint, or where it's located? Or when I said ball joint to him, it was just like I said spaceship landing gear or something. I think he'd had more concept of that than he did a ball joint. So I had to get down and put my finger on the part. No experience, you really feel shortchanged. I'll tell you a little something I have some experience in. And it was because I wanted to fix something. This has happened years ago to me now, but I had a man that had a vehicle he brought to me. And his explanation was, I go out to start this in the morning, and it starts, and about the time I turn loose of the key, it dies. And then I have to crank and crank and crank, almost run the battery down before it starts again. So he brought it to me. I thought, okay, we'll let it set till tomorrow morning, and I'll figure out what's wrong with it. I let it set till tomorrow morning, and it started and run perfect. And we kept this vehicle for probably, I'm going to say, 3, 4, 5 days. I don't remember. Every morning it'd start fine. I let it set till quitting time, and I'd go drive it again. It set overnight. It set over the weekend. It starts fine. Doesn't die Monday morning. I said, I don't know what to do. I said, every time I tried, it works fine. So finally, he said, I'll take it home. And he said, I said, I believe you, but I just don't know what's going on. So he went home. He said, I'll take a video of it. Now, this is before cell phone videos. This is back in the time when you got your camera out with your VHS tape in it, you know. And I remember when that was new technology. But he came out and he said, I remember he brought this video to us and he said, okay, you're going to have to plug it in and watch it. And he said, well, I'm going to start this old truck again. So he walks out and he puts a key in it and it's going to run this time. So he stops his video and the next morning he goes, I'm going to try this old truck again. He goes out and he starts a truck and at just about the time he lets go of the keys, it kind of flutters a little bit. And there it is. That's what it's doing right there. So, anyway, he brought that back to us. Anyway, when I finally figured out what was wrong with it, it was a little tiny check valve in the fuel filter housing. I didn't even know there was such a thing. But I finally found the problem. So yesterday, I was trying to do some catch-up and had a guy come by that I made acquaintance with, and he was describing his problem, and he had a truck about the same age as that other one was. So he began to describe his problem, and he said it's getting worse almost every morning. I go out and start my truck, and just about the time I let go of the key, it dies. And then he said it cranks and cranks and cranks until it finally starts. I kind of talked to him about it a little bit. I said, I know what the problem is. I know where to look. So I took a couple tools. I went out there and I took this little valve out and I said, look, this is supposed to be a check valve. And you can see right through it both ways. I said, we need one of these. But it was so easy to know where to go. But it was because I had credible experience. I've been there. All right. And it was... I would have never had the experience if I hadn't had a vision of accomplishment. I didn't know where the problem was, but I had a vision of fixing the man's problem years ago. Okay? So I want to incorporate that in our thought today. It's important for us to have a vision, but it's important also for us to do the thing. It takes a lot of preparation to really be in a place to get a vision, a real vision, not just some kind of little thought, some kind of spontaneous idea. I'm talking about a vision. We can all have a bright idea and say, oh, well, let's do this, and not really think it through. But a vision is something that you think through. You're in earnest. I want to know what the direction is that I ought to go in life. And then when we begin to apply ourselves and we accumulate experience, I'm going to tell you, folks, it's valuable and we need it. We need vision and we need real experience that can help other people. My subject today that I want to address is marriage. And I'd like for us to begin over here in Genesis, the second chapter, and read a verse that I know you've all read, and you know that it's there. You know what it says. You probably, most of you can quote it, or at least partly. Beginning in chapter 2, verse 21, it says, "And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord had taken from man made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Now, the 23rd verse says, "And Adam said," and he basically says this individual is going to be called woman. And then the next verse it says, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." It doesn't say who said it. But a lot of times we might conclude, some commentators feel like it was Adam's words in years later. And some think it feels like it was Moses' words because he's the one that was telling the story. But there was one commentator that I felt like that I would have to agree with more than others. He feels like that was God speaking in the 24th verse, and where he said, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." I believe that marriage is a divine institution instigated by God. I'd like to read another verse in Matthew, the 19th chapter, to kind of substantiate what I just said about this being God's words about the man and the woman leaving father and mother and cleaving to one another. Let's go to Matthew chapter 19. In verse 4 it says, "And he answered and said unto them, Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh." So here it's pretty clear, Jesus' word says that the he that made them from the beginning said, "For this cause shall a man leave father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh." I think it's very imperative that we not only come to grips with but accept that marriage between man and a woman is something that God designed. He caused it to be because it was part of His plan for humanity. But I want to tell us today that we have to have a vision of the function of marriage and its purpose in the lives of humanity. It's imperative because marriage is not a figment of the imaginations of men resulting in social pressure to conform to that. All right? Let me give you an example of what is man's design or development, and sometimes how we can feel social pressure to conform to it. Now, when we eat a meal at my house, we always use a plate, and we usually have at least a fork and a spoon. Depending on what is going to be served, many times that we'll have a table knife there as well when we get ready to set the table to eat. But those of us that have been just used to home life can be very intimidated if you go to some place and it looks like they got the whole toolbox out on each side of your plate. When you go and they've got maybe two forks the same size and another one that's smaller and maybe even another one, and on the other side you've got a couple teaspoons and something that looks like a soup spoon and a table knife and then maybe a sharp knife. I don't know. I mean, sometimes you see these table settings and it's like, what are you going to do with all that? You know, I don't know. But I want to tell you, one of the most intimidating things to do is go to sit down and eat with someone that's used to using all of that tools to eat with. And you wonder, now, what do we start with? You know, do you start on the outside and work in? Or you pick the big ones and work down to the small ones? Or what do you do here? So it can be, and once you eat your mashed potatoes and your beans with one of them, do you put that on the plate and they take that away and they bring something else? You see what I'm saying? But that is something that man has developed. And we can feel a lot of social pressure to conform. Now, I want to do this right because I want them to invite me back sometime, all right? That we feel that pressure to conform. But the point I'm trying to illustrate here is marriage is not like that. Marriage is not like that. It's not something that was man's idea, and now we feel social pressure to conform to it. The world that we live in today, unfortunately, is trying to change people's minds to where they think that the whole idea of marriage is just man's idea. But it's not. It's God's plan. And for if we don't get the vision that God has for it, we're going to mess it up. If we don't have a vision for something, you know what it's like to try to do something without reading the instructions or without hearing what you're supposed to do. A lot of times you're going to make a big mess out of it. And if we don't have a vision for marriage, all we're going to do is we're going to make a big mess. Godly marriage today is in the last stages of the endangered species list. It's almost extinct in nominal society. I said a godly marriage. A godly marriage is almost extinct in our society today. So that is why we have to have a vision about what marriage is all about. If we don't, what does Scripture say in Proverbs? The people will perish. The whole concept of what marriage is about is going to fail us. If we don't have a vision about what, if we don't have the objective, the goal, what is it that I'm working towards? If we don't have that, marriage is going to, it already around us is disappeared. This is due to a lack of vision on account of the public that we're associated with. You know, last Sunday we was talking about our spiritual vision, and I'm going to tell you that we must seek God for a spiritual vision for our lives before we can have a vision for a godly marriage. It's pretty tough to have a vision about what a godly marriage is if you don't have a vision of what the Lord wants for us in a spiritual walk with Him. Because our vision of marriage is going to be somewhere below that. We're looking for something in marriage that fulfills and satisfies us as an individual, and we're not really looking for the vision that God would have for us in marriage. In Philippians 2:12, anybody know what that says? I'm mainly concerned about the last part of that verse. Philippians 2:12 says, "Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." We must have a spiritual vision of what God expects for us for ourselves. It's not our vision to be part of a group, which I like being part of a group. It's not a vision of being accepted by a certain people or a certain group or a certain person or whatever. It is we must have a vision of working out our own salvation with God. And once we have that, then we can start developing a vision for other things that come under the umbrella of God-ordained institutions, and marriage is one of them. In Hebrews, the 6th chapter, I want to notice a verse here just to try to set our stage for something I'm going to tell you. It says in Hebrews 6:13, "For when God made promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no greater, he swear by himself." Now, I'm going to tell you this morning, I don't feel like I'm greater than anybody else, but I don't feel like I can use anybody else to be the example this morning, so I'm going to make myself conspicuous. I've shared my testimony to some extent with you all before, and you know that as a young man, I had a desire to be pleasing to the Lord. I believe the Lord dealt with me and let me know that if I didn't yield myself to Him at a pretty early age, I believe I was around 11 years old, I was going to make decisions that would get me in real trouble. And the Lord was talking to me, and I asked the Lord to save me. I know there's been times between then and now that I've had to go back and renew that because I felt that I had failed the Lord. But from an early age, I've had a goal. I want to be pleasing to the Lord. Yes. So, You know that I'd already determined to live for the Lord. I mean, when you're 11, I want to tell you, when I was 11, I thought getting married was the most ridiculous thing that was out there. I thought that the whole idea, I just knew that I could never be married because I would be mortified to have to kiss a girl up in front of a crowd of people. I thought that, you know, I just knew that that was part of the requirements, and there is no way that I would kiss a girl in front of people. So, anyway, at that time, I thought, you know, marriage was the last thing that was on my mind, but I want to be pleasing to the Lord. I want you all to get that planted in your mind this morning. And then as time went on, I realized that the whole world could be there. I wanted to be married. If the whole nation showed up at my wedding, it would be all right. They could see this if they wanted to. I wanted to be married. I wanted to have a home. I wanted to be a father. I realized my thinking was changing. My desires was changing. And, you know, because I went to public school, and it doesn't matter where you go to school, you're going to be associated with people of the opposite gender. So, when I went to school, I wasn't the most popular. I wasn't even in the popular group, I didn't think. But I want you to know that I was not totally without having something that was attractive about me. And just like other people are, you know, I mean, anyway, y'all understand what I'm trying to say here. And as I was in high school, I remember there was a time that I felt attracted to one young lady in my class, and I struggled with what to do about it. And I know that every time, because I wanted to be saved, see, I wanted to live for the Lord. And every time that I would try to pray about this and really be honest with, that's what prayer is when you get down and you open yourself up to the Lord and you tell the Lord exactly where you're feeling and what you're thinking and all of that. And every time I would try to pray about this situation, I came to the place that I realized that there's no way she would fit in my spiritual vision. I didn't think of it like that, but I just there's not going to work. They're too far out there. It's just not going to work. So I remember, I don't know how you all address these kind of things in your life, but I know what I did, so that's what I'm telling you this morning. I came to a place that I very awkwardly informed her that although I felt that I was attracted to her, I couldn't picture us together because of my convictions. And we hadn't went out on a date, nothing like that. It was just somebody that we knew each other at school. And I'm kind of one of these people that when I get to the point I realize I need to address something, I address it, and then sometimes some of the rubble falls down around you, you know. So you can imagine how awkward a young man would feel, and then you go to class the next day and this person's looking at you like you're some kind of weird person or something because you shared some kind of conviction in your heart. And I just, you understand what I'm saying? I was awkward. It was an awkward situation. And consequently, because of that, I realized this was out. There's no way. And I never dated or courted anyone while I was in high school. I didn't. Although the realization of I wanted to be married, I wanted to be a father, I want to be a husband, I wanted that for my life, I made that kind of commitment because I wanted my vision for marriage to line up with my vision of being pleasing to the Lord. It's important, folks. All right. My mother told me, as time went on, My mother told me that if I became interested in someone, to look at the young lady's mother. Now, I want to tell you that if you've had a godly mother, sometimes what they tell you is about like reading it out of the scripture. Okay? You just need to, later on you realize how valuable their instruction was. But she said to me one time, she said, you just need to look at her mother. And if there is something about her mother that you just absolutely cannot accept, or there's something about her mother that you, it just is revolting to you. She said, you better never let your affections go out to the daughter. Don't do it. Because the old saying is, a lot of times the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. More than likely, there's going to be some attributes that's going to follow along that'll be like that. But Mom, my mother, gave me some instructions about how to guide my vision. And I believe that if the mother of the young lady is a saved individual, that is certainly something you need to consider. When someone changes from a life of sin, if they've been raised in a sinful environment and they change from that, there's a change of course that the Lord can do something different with. I mean, unsaved people can have really bad attitudes and things like that that I believe salvation will fix. All right, so please understand the parameters I'm making these statements in. So my mother gave me that advice to help me with my vision for marriage. I'd like to go to 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter and the 14th verse. I'm talking to us about having a vision for a marriage this morning. In 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, a familiar verse that we have read many times, 6 and 14 says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? It's important for us to recognize that to go out and pursue, if your vision for marriage is to find someone that gratifies your expectations for physical beauty, and you have no consideration about their spiritual vision, you're making a mistake. It's not kinda, it's not sorta, it is, you're making a mistake. We have to realize that to be unequally yoked together in marriage with an unbeliever, what did he say here? He just gives instructions. Be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? Our vision for marriage must be congruent. You know what that statement, that word means? It must be congruent with our spiritual vision. Don't marry someone thinking that you're going to lead them to the Lord. All right, it's a bad idea. We must have our vision for marriage to be congruent with our spiritual vision. I'd like for us to go to Deuteronomy, the 22nd chapter, and notice verse 10. This verse came to my mind as I was thinking and meditating on this thought. We'll begin read here Deuteronomy 22 and 10, part of the instruction God gave His people. He said, thou shalt not plow with an ox and an ass together. Now, why would He put that in there? And why is it important? Did you know that just because you have two beasts of burden, an ox and an ass are both beasts of burden, right? Just because you have a beast of burden, two of them, doesn't mean that they ought to be put in the same yoke, pulling the same load. Just because two animals have four legs doesn't mean that they walk the same. Did you know that the back legs on a horse and an ass and a donkey and all of that are considerably different than the back legs on a cow? Isn't there something about the kneecap, which way the leg bends? You know, some animals, the legs, when they're in their pulling gait, they move like this, right? And then others walk like this. You ever notice that? You ever notice that? Okay. Well, y'all maybe have to just start watching things like that. But did you know that the gait, you know what the gait is? G-A-I-T. The stride. The stride of the ox and the stride of the ass is different. And did you know that if you hook them up together, if you put two men lifting something and they say, all right, on the count of three, we're going to start lifting. And they say, one, two, three, go, or whatever. There can be a lot accomplished there, right? But if you say, on the count of three, and they don't know what the word three means, or they don't know your language, and you start to lift, and they don't lift, and then they lift, and you forget, you're tired of holding, and you let your... Can you see what would happen? Did you know that if you hooked... why did he say this? Because he knew that it was going to be an unprofitable thing. If you got two animals, one lunging against the other on the yoke, you got all kinds of things that could happen. The yoke could get broke. The wear and tear on the hitching mechanism, all of those things can cause a major problem. You know, if you see animals harnessed up to work like this, they'll harness a horse much differently than they harness an oxen when they're going to pull a plow or pull a wagon. The way they hook them up is totally, it's just different. Okay? So, he said here, thou shalt not plow with an ox and an ass together. And in the New Testament, Paul is writing and he said, don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. I believe to enter into marriage knowing that this person does not have an experience of salvation, does not have a spiritual vision, and you've got a spiritual vision, you want to live for the Lord, you're asking for a terrible situation is what you're asking for. But it goes beyond that. There's instruction, I believe, for us to realize that marriage should include understanding the gait or the stride of my future spouse. That's one of the reasons I believe and I am an advocate of courtship. I believe there's a time during courtship that you can spend some time together, not in a necessarily a private... But I'm going to tell you, if you're around somebody on a more personal friendship level, there's going to be things that you're not going to know everything, all right? But there's going to be some things that will start to surface. And you will recognize whether or not you're of the same gait, of the same stride. If you have some of the same methods of approaching life And that could be a wide subject in itself. But I believe it's important for us to recognize that although if you've got two oxen, you can team them up together and they'll work really good together. If you had two asses, you could harness them up and they can pull substantially more than either one of them could individually and add those together. It's just a team is better than one. That's what marriage ought to be. We've got to have a vision about this. And if we don't have a vision of finding someone that I can really work with, not against, but work with. Did you know if you have an ox and an ass harnessed together, they're going to be working against one another? They're just not the thinking of how we lean into the load and how it's not that either one of them are not fitted for the job. It's not that either one of you might be unfitted for marriage. You understand? But the reason that we are an advocate, one of the reasons we're an advocate of courtship is that we want people to recognize, do I put my right foot forward all the time, or am I a person that puts my left foot forward? Am I someone that kind of hops along, or do I... I'm using that figuratively. You understand? It's important when you begin a courtship that you start being aware of one another's gait. Can I say it that way? Be aware. This is part of having a vision for a successful marriage. I'd like to turn now to Malachi, the second chapter. And I'd like to read a verse that has to do with marriage over here. Malachi, the second chapter, I want to read beginning in verse 10. Says here, have we not all one Father? Have not one God created us? Why do we deal treacherously, every man against his brother, by profaning the covenant of our fathers? Now, the writer here is dealing with the failures of Judah and Israel in their going back to idolatry and failing the Lord. In the 11th verse, he says, Judah hath dealt treacherously, and an abomination is committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah hath profaned the holiness of the Lord, which he loved, and hath married the daughter of a strange god. Now, I believe he's talking about spiritual wickedness, spiritual marriage, it's spiritual idolatry and adultery there. Then he goes on to say, the Lord will cut off the man that doeth this, the master and the scholar, out of the tabernacles of Jacob, and him that hath offered an offering unto the Lord of hosts. And this have ye done again, covering the altar of the Lord with tears, with weeping, and with crying out, insomuch he regardeth not the offering any more, or receiveth it with good will at your hand. Yet ye say, wherefore? Or why? Because the Lord hath been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, against whom thou hast dealt treacherously, and yet is she thy companion and the wife of thy covenant. And did not he make one? Yet had he the residue of the Spirit, and wherefore one? That he might seek a godly seed. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. The Lord is looking and seeking for a godly seed, a godly younger generation. And where are we going to get a godly younger generation than from a godly home and a godly marriage? That's the most likely thing. That's the most advantageous place for godly young people to come from. And he says here, because the Lord had been witness against thee and the wife of thy youth. What? Did you know that the Lord was there when you got married? And He was paying attention to the vows that you made? And He accepted your commitment and He honors that? And it's a wife of your covenant. You're making a covenant before God and man. And He said here in the 15th verse, "And wherefore one, made two one, that He might seek a godly seed. Therefore take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth." Now, as time goes on, we have new challenges in marriage. Not just the challenge of making sure that we have a vision to pick the right one, but that we have a vision of keeping our marriage intact. All right? Because you can have a vision of being spiritually sound. You can have a vision of seeking someone that will fit with your spiritual vision. You can follow through that vision. You can reach the objective. You can reach that plateau. But like we said earlier, once we reach something that we've had a vision for, the vision goes on to something else. And that's where we are in marriage. We must have a vision for our marriage that goes beyond just marrying the right one. Because I want to tell you, if you marry the right one, sooner or later, the devil is going to make it look like the wrong one. And there was a problem amongst the Israelite people by the time this writer was writing, to where if the wife of a man became older, just like he was, he decided that he didn't like her anymore, and he found a reason to dispose of her and marry somebody else, a younger woman. That sound familiar? It sounds like something goes on in our society today, and it was something that they dealt with back then. And we have to deal with the day. We have to have a vision, not just to get on the right street, but we have to keep our eyes open as we're passing along the course of life, that we don't get off in the bushes somewhere or get tangled up in an accident along the way. The devil has got an accident plan for us. He wants us to make shipwreck. He wants to sabotage our marriage. But the only way we're going to survive is if we have a vision about our marriage. We must retain the vision of "till death us do part." We must have that vision. We must keep that fresh in our mind. If we don't, the devil's going to find some reason that's going to make a lot of sense, and from his perspective, that we ought to do something different than that. I'd like to read now in Isaiah, the 52nd chapter. And notice beginning in verse 7. Isaiah 52 in verse 7. He says, "How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publish peace and bringeth good tidings of good, that publish salvation, that saith unto Zion, Thy God reigneth. Thy watchmen shall lift up the voice, with the voice together shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye when the Lord shall bring again Zion." Now, I believe Isaiah had a vision of the gospel day. I believe he had a vision of the unity of spirit and the ministry that would be in the age that we live in, the gospel age. And I believe that he wants us to have a vision of ourselves, of being able to see eye to eye on spiritual things. But I want to tell you, if you don't get anything, if you've already chosen your spouse, and you're already going down this course of life in marriage, I want you to get something out of the thought today. Besides having a vision of "till death us do part," you know, that can be, sometimes you can, that can translate into anticipating a party. Okay? You understand what I just said? You can have a vision of maybe they won't live as long as I do. All right? But that's not really what we want to have. That's not, we want to have that in our vision of, Lord, I'm going to be faithful to this. I want my love for my spouse to be valid. I want it to be strong all the way through my life. All right? We must have a vision of that. We must not have this shortcut thing of maybe she won't live as long. Maybe he'll pass away before I get out of middle age and I can finally experience something that'll really be beneficial to. No, that's not part of the vision that I'm talking about this morning. But I want us also to get a vision not just on spiritual things of being able to see to eye to eye, but as we go along. You know, I told you earlier that during courtship was a time that many times things surface that we recognize they don't approach life like I do. They don't walk like I do. Every time they open the door, they do this. Or I could just use a lot of illustrations here, but I hope you understand. It's important for us to be aware, instead of just, oh, they like me, be aware of what kind of person each other is. But before you get married, but once you get married, you're going to discover that there's a lot of things that are different. If anybody hasn't discovered that, please let me know. But you're going to find there's a lot of things that's different. I didn't know they were like this. I didn't know they thought that. And you thought that you knew them real well because you spent time together and you did have. Anita and I had a long courtship. I think it was anyway. It was 9 months before I asked her to marry me, and then we were engaged for 9 months. And I've said this before, I think it was too long for us to be engaged. We was in the same congregation and I felt like it was too long. But anyway, we thought we knew, we had learned a lot about each other, right? We learned a lot of things about each other during our courtship and during our engagement period. And there were things that she came to grips with, and I'm going to tell you one that she came to grips with, and I don't know if I still do this or not because I, anyway. She found out that when I would eat, that I'd turn my plate to the next thing that I wanted to eat. And when she, I don't know, does I still do that? But the Lord gave her victory over that to where it wasn't an issue. All right? But she come to grips with that before we got married. And when I guess the first time I done it, it was like, oh my. I mean, he eats like some kind of varmint or something, you know. I mean, that's just, I think that's some of the things that went through her mind. It was, she just thought that was a negative thing. But somehow the Lord helped her and she came to grips with that. But after we got married, there was things she found out about me and I found out about her that we didn't know. Just didn't know they were that way. So here's the thing that we need to get in our vision for our marriage. The Lord wants us to be able to see eye to eye. That's what was in Isaiah's vision, is that the ministry would be, the watchman on the wall would be able to see eye to eye. And the Lord help us to have that kind of objective and that kind of vision for our marriage. You know, we can go into marriage and discover these things that are different and just think, well, I don't know, it's just my cross to bear. This is my thorn in the flesh. But I'm going to tell you, the Lord wants us to have a vision of seeing eye to eye. And I'm going to tell you, young people that's not married, if you find the Mr. or Miss Perfect and you think this is the one, I mean, God created them especially for me. And maybe He did. But I promise once you find it, once you say I do, there's going to be some things that you recognize that you see different than they do. But don't allow your vision for marriage to, what did the Scripture say? Without a vision, the people perish. If you don't have a vision of seeing eye to eye with your spouse, your marriage is going to do what? It's going to perish. You see how important a vision is? Lord, help us with our vision for our marriages today. A vision doesn't mean that we can see it necessarily. Because in the New Testament, it tells us that when we see it, it's not faith anymore, right? He said, I'm telling you that vision doesn't mean that we can see it necessarily. It does mean that there's an objective and a goal. Vision also means it's an ideal that gives us direction. Lord, help us today to have a vision for our marriages. You pray for me.